Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. More Americans will be voting by mail in this fall's 2020 presidential election rather than in person due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And I say more voting, more will be voting than in previous years. President Donald Trump has suggested that voting by mail has potential for fraud. That's even though reports of fraud associated with mail-in voting are almost non-existent. In the meantime, the U.S. Postal Service said last week there's no guarantee ballots could be returned in time for the November 3rd election after overtime for postal workers was eliminated and sorting machines removed. Those changes were rescinded until after the election yesterday. Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro had been scheduled to be on today's program, but with the Postmaster General's moves yesterday, it has left some unanswered questions, so the Attorney General won't be on the program today. But we do have Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Commonwealth, Kathy Buchvar. Secretary Buchvar, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on, Scott.
I know there are a lot of questions about not just mail-in voting, but voting overall. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Buchvar, how confident are you that Pennsylvanians will be able to vote by mail this fall and that their votes will be counted?
I am very confident, Scott, and that's really important to say. When the postmaster, and, you know, there was news last week about the Postmaster General having sent us a letter sent actually to, I think, every state or close to every state in the country with concerns about the time frames. We need to be clear that that impacts the people who wait until the last week to apply for their ballot. Good news, you don't have to wait. So the ballot application process is open in Pennsylvania. It's been open for weeks and weeks. You could go to votespa.com today, apply. It's super easy. Apply for your mail-in or absentee ballot today. And then you know you'll get your ballot as soon as the counties finalize them, which is going to be in September. So you'll have 6, 7, maybe 8 weeks to submit your ballot. That's no problem at all. Don't wait until a week before Election Day, because that's coming at close even in normal years, right? So message, high confidence, don't wait. Vote, you know, apply today.
There is a proposal in the legislature that would move that deadline for the week before the election for applying for ballot, returning the ballot, but applying for a ballot from a week before Election Day to 2 weeks. Is that needed?
So, you know, as you may have heard, we've actually asked the court to allow for a postmarked return deadline. So instead of having the return deadline be received by November 3rd, have it be postmarked by November 3rd, but received by the Friday after, by November 6th. And, you know, I'll tell you, as with any contemplating of a solution to a problem, you need to balance all kinds of different factors. So our concerns with moving back the application deadline is that you may end up disenfranchising people who haven't applied in time. So for example, I was asked about making the application deadline be the same day as the voter registration deadline, which is 15 days before the election, which may be what you're referring to.
Yes.
400,000 Pennsylvanians submitted applications after the voter registration deadline in May. And so that means 400,000 Pennsylvanians might have lost their right to vote by mail because they were afraid to vote in the pandemic. So I don't want to disenfranchise people. I want to find that balance of enfranchisement with best processes.
Now, I understand where you're coming from with that, but looking at the other end of it, the back end, in the primary, there was a lot of confusion. Some would say chaos in some counties, counting all the ballots. It was some time before we had results with a number of the offices that were being sought. So what about that? I mean, wouldn't moving that deadline up a week, wouldn't it give the people on the back end who are counting that maybe that ensuing chaos that happened the first time wouldn't be there?
Well, first of all, I would be, I'm reluctant to use, there was no chaos. I mean, we were in touch with all the counties across the state. There was no chaos. There were a lot of ballots. I mean, I think you and I, I can't remember the last time I was on the show, but it was probably not at the very end right before the primary, but it was sometime in the spring, I think, or maybe it was, early in the spring.
Yeah, it was the spring.
Yeah. So, but, you probably saw, we had almost 1.5 million Pennsylvanians vote by mail compared to 84,000 in the last presidential primary in 2016. And so, of course, there was a lot more adjustment by the counties than they've, 17 times the number of ballots took quite a lot of change. Having said that, they processed almost 1.5 million Pennsylvanians' ballots, which is absolutely incredible in the middle of a pandemic. So what I would say is this. There are 19 states across the country that have postmark deadlines that allow for the receipt of ballots after Election Day, some 3 days later, some a week later, some as much as 2 weeks later. And these include some swing states, so Ohio, North Carolina, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, a lot of states, including swing states, allow this because, frankly, postmark dates make sense because you can't control the mail. You just want to make sure you get it in as early as possible. So, we just want to design the solution to fit the problem and not cause more disenfranchisement.
Okay, so maybe chaos was too strong of a word, but there were some counties who admitted that they were overwhelmed. That, as it may be, we're getting a number of questions. I'm going to get to some from listeners. But here's one that, and this is kind of a technical question, but it could be an important one. At last check, counties... I should say right up front that the Department of State is covering return postage for mail ballots. At last check, counties had some choices as far as how to do that. And two are using the state business reply mail account on their own if the county has one and getting reimbursed by the state. But the Postal Service says mail doesn't get a traditional postmark or its practical equivalent of BRM accounts, nor an intelligent barcode. If the ballot return deadline is moved, as the Department of State has requested, for ballots that are postmarked by Election Day, then how will that work given that the Postal Service says it will lack a postmark or a practical equivalent for ballots being returned utilizing the account? Does state law need to change to facilitate that?
So that's a great and very thorough question, and I'm happy to say the answer is no. So what we're requesting, and I want to be clear, so whether the deadline does or doesn't change, as it currently stands, because it's a receipt deadline, postmark is irrelevant, right? So it doesn't matter whether there's a postmark on it. If the court agrees with us and goes with the postmark by Election Day received by Friday, what we've asked is that so long as it's received by Friday and there's no evidence to the contrary. So obviously if there's a postmark for Wednesday or Thursday, that would be evidence to the contrary. But so if there's a missing postmark or illegible postmark, but it's received by Friday, then it's presumed to have been postmarked by Tuesday. So whether it has it or it doesn't, as long as it's in the door on Friday, it will be accepted.
Now, I'm going to address some of the issues that President Trump has brought up. The president has been saying for months that there's great potential for fraud. Even though experts disagree, those same experts have said there's greater potential for fraud than if someone votes in person. How can you stop fraudulent ballots or fraud in voting?
So You know, Pennsylvanians have been voting by mail, by absentee ballot, for decades and decades. And, you know, I really can't say more strongly that the way counties check eligibility, the way our whole process is set up, is designed to ensure the eligibility of the voter. So, for example, on the front end, there's sort of two sides to the eligibility checking. On the front end, when you apply, Pennsylvania law requires that you apply for your ballot. So we're not just sending ballots in the mail. You have to apply. And when you apply, the system asks you for either your driver's license ID number or the last four of your Social Security number. You are being checked against the Social Security database or the PennDOT database and your voter record with your county. So before they even send you a ballot in the mail, they've determined that you're eligible. Then after you get your ballot and you cast your ballot, that ballot isn't counted until they've checked your eligibility, you sign the outer envelope, the voter's declaration, you're checked against your voter record, and there's an opportunity for challenges, right? Every candidate, every party has an opportunity to have representatives. They can be challenged. And so it's like a sandwich of eligibility checking, and it's incredibly secure and protects voter integrity in Pennsylvania.
I saw a letter to the editor in a local newspaper questioning whether if you decide to mail in your ballot, whether it is actually a secret ballot. Someone else described a situation where one person in a family could vote for everyone else. How do you know the name on the ballot of the voter is the person who actually voted?
Well, you know, there's criminal penalties in Pennsylvania for violation of these. So you can, of course, you know, there's the flip side of this, right, Scott? So like a lot of people, and, you know, maybe this would be the next question that comes, you know, particularly this year with the pandemic when there were people in senior care facilities where they literally couldn't have visitors to help. Sort of the opposite problem arose because Pennsylvania has strict limitations on the fact that voters generally have to deliver their ballot themselves. You can, if you're a voter with a disability, there are circumstances where you can designate somebody, but it's very strictly limited. And that was a problem for a lot of people in the middle of the pandemic. So this is a balance, but I have to say those provisions in Pennsylvania law that require that either it be the voter or that the voter be designating somebody who, you know, if the voter has a disability, make it, and then the criminal penalties combined with that, make it extremely rare that there's no evidence of such. There's no evidence that this has ever been a problem in Pennsylvania, nor that it's a problem now.
And you know, along those lines, though, there have been people who said that, you know, if you designate people to help others, that has potential for fraud.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
Along those same lines, that the people say that if someone is designated to help someone, you know, I've heard the term community organizers, that to help someone vote by mail, that creates some potential for fraud.
You know, again, like this is not something that's ever been a problem in Pennsylvania. I know that people ask about it and articles, you know, quote the fear, but the truth is this is not, people would be being prosecuted left and right if this was a problem. The truth is Pennsylvania law has found that balance. It ensures that people are voting their own ballot, or if they have a disability, they're designating somebody with assistance, you know, that they need assistance. And again, you need to have that provision on both sides. And Scott, I want to just make a mention. I got a note from our office saying that Business Reply Mail, by the way, does have a postmark. It's called alternative cancellation marks. So that gives extra protection. You know, as I said, it really doesn't matter based on how we've designed what we're asking for, but it does have actually a date, cancellation date.
Okay. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about voting by mail. We're talking about voting overall this fall's election with Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth, Kathy Buchvar. If you have a question or comment, and we have a few already, and we'll get to those in just a moment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Buchvar, I have to say that, you know, some of these questions I'm asking are basics that we talked about last spring when Pennsylvania enacted the ability to vote by mail. But there has been, let's put it out there where it is, that the President Trump has talked about it and criticized it so much that it has created a lack of confidence maybe in some voters out there. And I get the sense that you're having to restore that confidence in a lot of voters. Would you agree with that?
So what I would say is this, Scott, we are constantly, and especially in the last 2 years, been battling misinformation out there in social media and media, you know, there's whether it's from Russia or other sources. This is something that we're constantly working on. And the National Association for Secretaries of State and the Department of Homeland Security and many other national organizations have been working very closely, particularly in the last year and a half or 2 years, to put out, you know, to focus on Trusted Info 2020. So to make sure that voters do not believe what they see on Twitter, do not retweet things without checking trusted sources. What are trusted sources? Go to votespa.com. We have a ton of information there that's accurate and reliable. You could call your county election office. You can call our toll-free number, 877-VOTES-PA, and ask your question. But, you know, I think, Scott, by the numbers of applications for mail-in ballots that are already rolling in, I think there's a lot of people who do know that it's trusted, but also know it needs to start now and that we can't wait. The 1 to 3 days that it used to be to turn around mail is not in existence right now, right? So we've had to make a lot of accommodations to our lives. We are seeing, you know, tens of thousands, it's going to be hundreds of thousands, and then it's going to be millions of applications rolling in. We already have over 1 million Pennsylvanians who asked for permanent annual status in the spring. So they will be getting a ballot even without filing a new application come fall. So I don't know. We are constantly working to make sure that everybody has confidence in their elections from start to finish. And, you know, but I know that Pennsylvanians are choosing to vote this way. And it's a great option.
We just got a question from a listener along the same lines of what you were talking about. If I successfully voted by mail in June in the primary, do I need to request a ballot or will I receive one automatically?
Excellent question. So it really depends on whether you checked a box. There was a box on the application that said, I want to be a permanent annual mail voter. If you check that box, then you don't need to reapply. And if you did not check that box, you do. And if you don't remember, go to votespa.com. There's a ballot tracker status, and you just have to enter your name, your county, and your date of birth. And you'll see it will pull up a couple of different columns that you may have checked in the spring when you were wondering whether your ballot had been received. If you already are a permanent voter, under ballot status all the way on the right, it will say pending. That means as soon as the ballot is finalized by the county, it will be automatically sent to you. If the I did not ask to be a permanent status voter, so when I put in my name and county and date of birth, it says your record has not been found. That's because I have not yet applied this year. So that's the question. Go on to votespa.com, the ballot status, enter your information, and it will tell you whether you've applied or not.
Here's something that I think there has been a lot of confusion on. Many people, and I have to say that a lot of this is on social media, many people have been talking about receiving ballots in the mail without them requesting them. They are not receiving ballots. They are receiving applications, correct?
Thank you for making that point, Scott. You are 100% right. In Pennsylvania, we are not sending ballots automatically to anybody except for those who have already asked to be permanent status mail-in voters. And that all just happened in the spring, so they're very recently submitted their application. So what people are getting are applications. And, you know, and I got one. My household got one from, I live in Bucks County, we got one from the Bucks County Republican Party, and it had two applications. One of them was pre-filled in for a prior resident of the household, and one of them was an extra that it said, feel free to give this to anybody. But it was to current resident. It was to ex-name or current resident. So whether it's a political party, whether it's a nonprofit organization, whether it's a candidate, a lot of people are sending these applications. If you've already submitted it or you want to vote in person, just throw it in the trash. It's just to make it easy for people to have access to the applications.
Okay, I want to follow up, and this was something we got from a listener as well, when you talked about using at least two of the lawsuits, when you're asking the court to move the ballot return deadline until the Friday after the election, what happens if those decisions are still under appeal when the election arrives?
It's not going to be. I mean, the courts make a point of deciding. They expedite these cases so that they're decided. Cases have been filed much, much, much closer to the election and still decided by election day. So I have no concerns whatsoever about that. It will be decided. We actually just Sunday actually filed what's called a King's Bench request to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, asking them to skip over the lower court and decide, you know, there's competing, this sort of mirror image lawsuits, one in federal court, one in state court, that have very similar claims. We're basically asking the Supreme Court, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, to hear them now, make those decisions, because voters and counties need to know as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. When the president says universal mail-in voting, that's what he's criticized most often, universal mail-in voting. That is not what we're talking about here in Pennsylvania. There are five
Correct.
States where there is universal mail-in voting. So if you would, clear that up. We are not talking about universal mail-in balloting. If people want to vote in person, they can.
Absolutely. And not only are we making sure that mail-in voting is safe and secure, we're making sure that in-person voting is safe and secure. And I'll tell you, and I am a huge believer in voters having a choice. And actually, thanks to Act 77, you know, I sort of think that we have three primary choices in Pennsylvania. So every voter should know you can vote by mail, and like I said, go to votespa.com today, apply for your ballot. You'll get your ballot most likely in September, get it in, you'll be done. Another option is voting in person on November 3rd. We're going to have the ballot, the polling places are going to be open. We are, again, the Department of State is providing, in conjunction with PEMA, the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, we're providing masks and face shields and gloves and tape to mark social distance and all those things. We also just ordered sneeze guards, you know, the plastic dividers for the check-in. We are going to make sure that in-person voting from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., you know, safe and secure. And then there's a third option, Scott, that I want to make sure voters don't forget. So what, under Act 77, it required that all counties have to provide opportunities for in-person absentee or mail-in voting. So basically, and this didn't get to be used in the primary because of all the county shutdowns due to COVID, but that does not appear to be the case currently, thank goodness, knock on wood. So in September, once your county finalizes its ballot, you can find out what the hours are of your county election offices, and they may have multiple satellite county election offices. You could go in person. You could request your mail-in ballot. They will check your eligibility, hand the ballot to you while you're there. You could fill it out and cast it all in the same visit. It's the equivalent of early voting in Pennsylvania, and you could do it weeks before Election Day. So these are three great options, and I want to make sure that every Pennsylvanian knows you can do what works for you.
Okay, so just to clarify that last point, we just got a question from a listener who said, if I've applied for a mail-in ballot, can I vote in person?
So, meaning on election day, do you think,
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a new provision. In case you didn't have enough new provisions, there's a new provision that says if you received a mail-in ballot and you've decided that you want to vote on election day, don't send it in. Keep the outer envelope. Keep the whole package, the outer envelope, the ballot, the inner envelope. You can go into your polling place on election day, and you could basically hand in or void your ballot. It's called spoil your ballot, but that sounds kind of like an odd word to use. But basically, you're handing in your complete ballot. Don't forget the outer envelope and say, I asked for this, but I did not vote it. I want to vote on the regular machine. They'll have you sign a declaration, and you'll be able to vote on the regular machine.
We have a phone call from Egan in Lancaster. Egan, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. There's a letter in LNP this morning, and the writer says that he received in the mail one of these applications for mail-in voting. He said in the letter that he was surprised because it was addressed to his mother, who had passed away. Now, the writer goes on to say that he has all the information, financial and so forth, about his mother, and he could actually mail in his application and so forth with all the correct information and so forth. So the point of the letter is that this is not a very good system. Could you reply to that, please?
Sure. Well, first of all, unless he could completely perfectly, match her signature. I'm not sure if this, I guess this person has probably been voting in the same place, so wouldn't have to show ID if they've been voting there previously. But the person, whoever sent out the application, they may not have updated lists, but the county does get notifications from the Department of Health about deaths. They have to track obituaries, so the counties are updating their voter records every number of weeks. And so, but these third party, I'm not sure who sent this application in the mail to this person, but they may have years old lists. And so what's going to happen is if they try to submit an application, again, the first thing that's going to happen is the county's going to check that voter record, and chances are that voter record is going to identify that the person passed away, and therefore the ballot request is going to be rejected and is not going to be even sent. If, let's say, the person just passed away like the day before, and so the county hasn't updated their records, by the time they send the ballot, they will have updated their records. And so, again, the ballot's not going to be sent to somebody who's identified as having been deceased. So there's a lot of checks and balances in Pennsylvania. And again, those applications are not being sent by an official source. They're being sent by either a third-party organization or a political party or a candidate who might be using outdated lists.
We have another question from a listener. Many people are saying we should turn our ballot into the election office instead of relying on the mail system. Does the election office depend on the postal service for getting their ballots into a central location? Does turning it into the office help?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that one more time, Scott? You just came in and out.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Let me find
sorry
it again.
About that.
Says many people are saying we should turn our ballots into the election office instead of relying on the mail system. Does the election office depend on the postal service for getting their ballots into a central location? Does turning it into the office help?
That is a great question. And the answer is, look, again, if you apply today and you get your ballot in September, you can choose. You can put it in the mail. You could drop it off in person. You could do any number of things. If you're applying at a later point, I am somebody that even in totally normal times, I like sort of the definitiveness of handing in a ballot. I've always felt that way my entire life. Call me OCD. I don't know. So every vote, and a lot of counties are going to be designating additional drop-off locations, either multiple county election offices or other drop-off locations or secure ballot receptacles around the counties that will allow voters options for direct delivery without using the mail. I absolutely suggest that if a voter can drop it off at a location, absolutely, because that's a given. Then you have that knowledge, that tangibility of handing it in. But if you can't, as long as you're early, don't worry about it. You'll be able to put it in the mail, and that will be fine.
Will there be drop boxes around the state?
Yes, I believe that there will be.
Will they be secure?
Yes. And again, you know, as you know, the courts are going to be deciding this issue. So, you know, the final say will be there. But we believe that there are secure options for drop-off locations. And I can tell you, Scott, that the counties that used them for the primary and the voters that used them for the primary, it gave them such confidence in knowing what we were just talking about, right? The voters knew when they dropped it at a drop-off location that it would be received on time. And the counties, it gave the counties great confidence that they would be delivered on time, right? Because they were the ones designating officials who signed declarations that they would perform their duties. They did careful checking of the chain of custody of the ballots and so forth. And so, yes, there are very, very good best practices that counties can use to make sure that this is done securely and safely.
Secretary Buchvar, we're getting so many questions. Can you stay on the entire hour with us?
Sure, Scott.
All right, good. Let's get to a few more of these questions. I am a poll worker in Lancaster County and suggest that for efficiency and mail-in ballots should be scanned at the polling place at the end of the evening. In Lancaster County, the spring primary election rules were to scan the ballots in bulk at the Board of Elections headquarters. This was a mountain of work for a few people and took days to complete. When scanned at the many individual polling places, fewer ballots can be counted in about an hour. What do you say to that?
So a couple of things. So and this was Lancaster, correct?
Yes.
So Lancaster had a specific situation where they actually, their printing company, the ballot printing company, printed some of the barcodes or QR codes too light on some of the ballots. So they literally couldn't be read in the precincts by the precinct scanners. So it wasn't even just the mail-in ballots that they had to scan centrally. It was a lot of the, you know, it was a good number, and I'm not sure what percentage, but it was a good percentage of the in-person voting ballots as well. So the reason why, and I used to be a poll worker back before, long before Act 77, and so, you know, I definitely remember the precincts, the poll workers were the ones who used to count the absentee ballots. But again, there were 1/17th, you know, the number than there are now. And I know in my old precinct, when we would count absentee ballots, even when it was a tiny fraction of what it is now, we would be there until after midnight. If you had 17 times that many, the poll workers, many of whom are, you know, senior citizens and, you know, have already had an extremely long day, would be there probably 24 hours by the time they got them all counted. So Act 77 did the right thing and changed it so that mail-in and absentees can now be counted on high-speed, high-capacity scanners by the counties at their central offices. And I think that's the right call.
Is there a difference between absentee and mail-in ballots?
No, I mean, so, you know, if you look at the application, the absentee ballot has an A at the top and the mail-in ballot has an M at the top. And basically, it's the process and the processing of these ballots are the same. So what's different is that the absentee ballot, you know, if you know, like in the primary, I knew that I was going to be absent from my municipality because I live in Bucks County and I work in Harrisburg. So I was not going to be present. So I applied for an absentee ballot because that's clearly based on I know I will be absent. But if you don't know whether you'll be absent or not and you just want to vote by mail, apply for a mail-in ballot because that sort of covers any reason or no reason at all. either way, you can't be challenged on accidentally filing the wrong one. So nobody could say her ballot should not be counted because she should have filed an absentee ballot and she filed a mail-in ballot. It's all the same. The same eligibility checks apply. The same counting processes apply. And every vote is counted.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest on today's program is Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth Kathy Buchvar, answering questions about the upcoming election, mail-in balloting in particular. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. You can send an email by sending your question or comment to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Pete. Pete, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
How are you folks doing?
Doing well. What's your question,
good.
Pete?
Last week, I went to the Maine post office in Harrisburg to mail a birthday card to a grandson. We have family in the Netherlands. And I was told by the clerk at the counter that there was a freeze on mail going in or out of the country, supposedly because of COVID-19, which I thought was rather ridiculous. And the woman said to me, I can take your mail, but I can't guarantee when it will actually be delivered. So I'm wondering, how does this affect people who live overseas and vote by mail and the military overseas?
That is an excellent question, and thank you for asking. So military and overseas voters can actually get their blank ballots remotely through electronic means. So let me be clear, this is not online casting of ballots because there's still strong security concerns around the casting of ballots via electronic means. But they can receive their ballots via electronic means. So we have a secure system set up in Pennsylvania that was designed specifically for military and overseas voters. There's multi-factor authentication and checking of making sure that the person is, you know, secure and eligible. But they submit their request electronically. They get their blank ballot electronically. And then the only thing that needs to happen through the mail is the return of the ballot, and they can use alternate methods as well, not just the postal service. So we don't, thank goodness, have to rely on those issues when we're getting ballots to overseas military voters.
Just a little bit of history here. 1864 probably was when the first time mail-in ballots were used in the United States, Union soldiers. Lincoln probably wouldn't have won the 1864 election without those Union soldiers voting by mail, correct?
Thank you for that historical context. But yeah, I mean, look.
Just thought I'd throw that in there, Secretary.
I'm reminded of, you know, sort of the fascinating means of transport that other countries, time periods have used. You know, I don't know if you saw, I'm trying to remember, I think it was in 2018. I remember seeing pictures of voting in India, and there were images of election officials delivering voting machines to remote villages by elephant. And, you know,
I mean,
we've dealt with, around the world, we've dealt with many challenges before. This is one of the toughest one we've seen in this country in a long time, but we will get through it, and people will be able to express their voice and vote.
Let's go to a phone call now. Laurie is in Lebanon. Laurie, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I am concerned because I saw that Representative Russ Diamond posted on Facebook. He said, we are working to get the drop boxes removed. And when asked for clarification on what we was, he said the General Assembly. And that there are concerns that the drop boxes aren't secure enough, especially in urban areas. So I guess my question is, does this have any basis or foundation, and can the General Assembly do something like that for this election?
So the General Assembly, you know, as you know, I think thankfully the laws are made with a combination of the legislature and the governor. And, you know, I know that the administration is a strong supporter of making sure that every voter has access to voting in a secure manner that protects the integrity of the vote. So I can assure you that we will be doing everything we can to make sure that voters have those options available and that counties have processes in place that make those options secure, safe, and guarantee the integrity of the vote. And I absolutely think we can do that, without question. And I don't care whether it's urban, rural, rural, suburban, exurban. Processes are processes, and counties, the county election officials are some of the most dedicated people I have ever worked with in my life, and they know how to do this. They've been doing variations on this for decades and decades, and they do it extremely well and carefully.
But can the legislature change that?
They can try, just like they could pass lots of laws that are vetoed by the governor.
And the governor would veto such a law?
You know, I mean, I think I can't answer, you know, would the law include just that? Would the law, proposed law, include 10 other things? Would the Democrats even vote for what the Republicans are pushing forward? You know, I think too many questions without an actual law in front of me to be able to speak for the governor on this one.
We have an email here from Shar, who says, for the first time in 9 years, my weekly letter to Montana, mailed August 5th, has not arrived. It usually took 5 days at most. A letter to my banker in Doylestown last month was never received. How am I supposed to trust the now scaled down post office to deliver my vote?
So again, and I'm going to sound like a broken record on this, but I think it's worth repeating. You know, if you as soon as you get your ballot, if you get your ballot in September and you stick it in the mail 6, 7, 8 weeks before Election Day, it will be received. But because of Act 77, you don't have to do it that way. You can drop it off in person. You could not even request the application by mail. You could just go in person, call your county election office in mid-September, and ask if the ballot's been finalized. And once it is, or, you know, if they know what date it's going to be finalized, once it is, go in person, go early, go on a random Thursday at 2 p.m. if that happens to work for you. Stop in your county election office and say, I want to cast my ballot today. And again, they'll check your eligibility. You'll submit an application. If you're determined eligible, they'll hand you the ballot. You'll be able to go into a room, fill out the ballot, put it in all the envelopes, hand it back in, and you'll be done weeks before Election Day. I can't recommend that method strongly enough. It is such a great option that you can do on your own schedule.
Next caller says, my girlfriend applied to the primary election to receive a mail-in ballot all the time. She had to call her county election office to see if she was on the list to receive a mail-in ballot this fall. They did not have her on the list. Voters need to double-check on this to make sure they will get a mail-in ballot this fall. This happened in Northumberland County.
That's a great point. And honestly, like, it can't hurt. You know, I check, even checking your registration, right? You know, mistakes happen from time to time. You know, the mistakes happen, and a county might accidentally miss that somebody checked that box. So you can either go on to votespa.com the ballot status tracker. You could call your county election office like the caller did. You can also call 877-VOTES-PA. That's a Department of State's toll-free number. We have people who can also check your status. They can check to tell you whether you have already applied or you need to apply again. And I completely agree with the caller. Don't wait, you know, don't wait until the last minute. Like, call now. Check your status. Find out whether you could expect a ballot automatically or whether you need to apply again.
We have another call, or excuse me, another email from Ann, who says, when I moved to Pennsylvania in 2017, I registered to vote and I applied for and received an absentee ballot for the primary election. Do I need to apply again for the presidential election?
In 2017, is that what they said?
Yes, yes.
Yes. So, yes, you need to apply again. And again, very easy. Go to votespa.com. Just click on the links to apply for a mail-in or absentee ballot, and, you know, they'll walk you through the process. It's very simple. And by the way, Scott, for any listeners who may have more comfort level in Spanish than English, we now have the mail-in and absentee ballot online application also in Spanish. So, and if anybody speaks a different language, you can always call 877-VOTES-PA and ask for an interpreter. We have, you know, interpreter services for, you know, many, many, many languages.
Well, let's talk a little bit about in-person voting. Will there be fewer places to vote in person? Has there been changes since the spring or even since last November in polling places?
So as you know, probably, you know, a lot of people have asked me this question because of the consolidations that happened in June. That was limited to June. So we had Act 12 of 2020 was passed in March, which not only moved the primary from April 28th to June 2nd, but it also allowed for broader consolidation of polling places solely for June 2nd. So that law expired that day. So now the law resumes as it always has been, which is that counties can only consolidate polling places if they get court permission. So they can go in front of a court, you know, and then communities can, you know, can file, can testify and, you know, say why it shouldn't or, you know, why X, Y, or Z considerations need to be considered. But the presumption is that we will have much closer to the full number of polling places and not nearly the cutbacks we saw in the middle of the surge of the pandemic.
Will there be enough poll workers in November?
Thank you for asking. Can I please take this opportunity to encourage every person listening and everybody you know to please consider being a poll worker? My first job in elections was as a poll worker, and I can tell you, you never feel more like you're part of the wheel of democracy as you do when you're allowing people to exercise their right to vote, their voice, their democracy. So, there, you know, I'm confident that we will get there, but I can tell you it's never been more challenging than it is right now. And I want to reassure everybody, you will have masks, you'll have face shields, you'll have the plastic dividers, you'll have gloves, you'll have social distancing. It's going to be very safe, but we need you to make sure that our democracy can run in November, because these are the true heroes of our democracy. So please, you know, if you're a business, you know, we're encouraging some businesses. You may have seen an announcement. The Pittsburgh Penguins is the first hockey team in the NHL to announce that they're giving all their staff a paid day off and encouraging them to serve as poll workers. Other businesses are doing this as well. I've been talking with law firms and, you know, large corporations to encourage them to compete against each other to see who can provide more support to as poll workers. But I encourage every individual and business to really engage your teams to do this on this incredibly important day, November 3rd.
How can they do that? How can someone, an individual or a business, how can they become poll workers?
Great question. So if you go to votespa.com, there's a link to how to become a poll worker, and it will give you information on what's involved, and there's also a sign-up. And then what happens is when you put in your information, it sends your information to your county. You can also call your county directly, the County Board of Elections, and if you don't know the phone number, you can go to votespa.com. There's a county drop-down. Pick your county. It will give you the phone number, address, and so forth for the county, and you can call them directly and ask. Some counties allow split shifts where you don't have to serve the whole day as a poll worker. Some counties require a full day shift. So that's a question that your county will be able to answer. But again, go to votespa.com. You could fill in the information on how to, you know, becoming a poll worker, and it will give you every everything you need to know.
Kathy Buchvar, Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth. A lot of questions and a lot of important information. We will have links to your website, the phone number on our website, WITF.org. Secretary Buchvar, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about women candidates running for office. Talk to you tomorrow.
WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein, and Lear.